This is the Experience Lab, the official podcast of digital scientists from Atlanta, Georgia. We're an experience lab that explores and builds digital products. My name is Rob Hall, and I'm the Senior Director of Product at DS.
And I'm Jake Osgrove, Senior Product Manager.
Thanks for listening. We're here today with our esteemed colleague, Mr. Jerry Dang.
Hello, guys.
Jerry, so excited to have you, man.
Jay, can you explain what Jerry really does?
Jerry is a principal developer that is one of our lead AI and machine learning engineers.
He's basically a genius, is what you're saying.
Pretty sure he built Skynet.
I don't want John Connor to come and kill me, but anyway. People come to me with problems, and usually clients, and I try to figure out ways to solve it.
What we're here to talk about today is machine learning. And first of all, what is it? What is machine learning? And is machine learning the same thing as artificial intelligence? Is it different from AI? And if so, how?
AI and machine learning, just little differentiation there can give you an idea of what machine learning is. Probably during your childhood, you play video game and came across the term AI as the way to actually like those NPC or enemy actually find its route and come attack you, or some basic baked in logic like that.
You kind of have this classic sci-fi image in your brain about what artificial intelligence does. And usually it's the bad guy, right?
Yes, it's usually the bad guy. But if you bring it to practicality in today's application, actually a lot of things can be considered AI. For example, your Google Maps that you like take me from here to the restaurant, and that routing mechanism or algorithm is considered AI. It's just, it's baked so much into our life that we don't call it AI anymore. It's just so given. Even simple computer logic, if and then or else, that kind of rule, they could be considered AI. And machine learning is a subset of that. It's trying to mimic intelligence like AI does, except it's using repetition and figuring out a pattern out of that repetition. Sort of, that's the term where the term learning came from.
And so just to get like super literal and simplistic with it.
Right.
If I'm a machine and I am being trained to recognize certain patterns in data.
Yes.
So I have a set of data that I'm trying to analyze, and I create an algorithm that loops over that data and tries to look for certain types of patterns or a certain type of information within that set of data. You could consider that machine learning.
Yes. And you can actually give it a simpler example. For example, in stock trading, there is moving average. Moving average itself is the simplest form of machine learning. It's basically you have a bunch of price data point, and then you draw a slope line, diagonal line, upward or downward. And that's, in a way, that's machine learning too. It's just the simplest form of machine learning. I think it's linear regression, which is just calculating that particular slope and positioning it on the amount of price point dots. And that is considered machine learning too.
I'm pretty sure I remember learning about linear regressions in high school.
Yeah,
maybe. That was a long time ago.
Did you finish high school?
Oh, cute.
Jerry, I'm curious because you used the first example of AI as like bots, or what I would call bots in like games, right? Like that you play against that are trying to figure out. The first thing that always comes to my mind is 007 GoldenEye on the N64 for all those that used to play that. And the bots coming after you, and you would try to get the golden gun. So what differentiates maybe in that example between just strict machine learning and AI?
That particular example, the bot is actually more of an AI than machine learning because it's like a pre-programmed route, usually, that it takes to chase from his starting point to the point that your character is, figuring out a path to it. But it doesn't really learn from past experience. It doesn't grow stronger over time.
It's not really, okay, so it's not smart. It's just, it has its defined boundary of operation and that's it.
Yes.
Okay. Now, are they getting smarter in games where the bots do learn?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are quite a few esports, OpenAI is participating in entering one of the esports tournament where they train the machine to compete with human player, and it beats quite a few elite level of players online. And similarly with DeepMind has trained something to play StarCraft that that almost consistently win over the strongest human player.
Where, at least in your expertise, Jerry, where do you draw the line between machine learning and artificial intelligence?
Well, today, when people talk about AI and machine learning, they are mostly referring to machine learning more so than AI. It's just, if you ask a bunch of like experts in the field, they would all give you a slightly different definition. So for the sake of keeping the reference point the same, I think most people are referring to machine learning as the term instead of referring to AI anymore, because AI is so given. Even an IoT product, even an if this then that kind of like product, is considered an AI to a point. So it's too broad of a term to actually discuss.
So it's cool to just say, yeah, we're into artificial intelligence, but not really necessarily truly doing that.
Yeah, you could totally doing like an if this then that kind of statement, logic, and call yourself AI.
Oh, well, then I'm an AI expert. Right. I've done that. I'm just kidding. What is machine learning not?
Well, it's not hard code. It's not building in rules for it to actually just follow like the 007 bot example. You try to craft it so general that it can react to different situations. So anytime you try to hard code stuff in your solution, that's not machine learning. In machine learning, the main differentiator is actually it learns over time, learns over past experience. And gotcha. That's the key component.
So if the situation that you're setting up does not have a learning mechanism as part of it, then you may consider it AI, but you wouldn't consider it machine learning at that point, because it's not actually becoming smarter. Okay, cool. That makes sense.
Like Google Analytics, for example, just there's this whole question of machine learning, data science, analytics, blah, 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 blah. And as buzzwords, they're very easily interchanged, I think, even though they mean very discrete, different things.
Right. In your example, you're talking about analytics, and that's definitely a field where it can shine. You can use machine learning in, let's say, Google Analytics to predict trends of your inbound visitor and their likelihood of dropping at certain stage of their visit to your website or interacting with your mobile application. You can use those data to enhance your user experience by knowing exactly where the user drops and how do you actually improve those steps of the engagement to improve that. So that's definitely one area of machine learning, but it's way more than that. You could apply it in pretty much any field. Pretty much, if you give me an example, I can give you an example of utilization of machine learning.
Popcorn sales.
I
want to sell more popcorn.
Okay. If you want to sell more popcorn, you want to have your sales data available by region, by time, and the particular distribution area, like, for example, movie theater and whatnot. And by capturing those data, you would know when and where the popcorns get sold more often than not. Maybe a way to figure out, like, for example, you have a lot of sales on movie theater in the east area, but you're not doing much on the west area. So there could be data that is missing that I infer that from your past experience, you're selling more in the east, but there's a lot of opportunity on the west side theater that you're missing out. And it could be other venue too. You're doing really well in theater, but you're not doing as well in schools.
So that's just like a general sales analysis.
Right.
Now, and I guess the differentiator for utilizing machine learning in that instance is I can find that data out if I just cobbled together my own sales reports and figure out the geography of where my product is selling and where it's not.
Right.
But machine learning can help automate that process and draw those conclusions for me.
Yes. We come up with those analysis because we dealt enough of this and we have those patterns sitting in our head. We know that's the missing gap. But without actually specifically telling the machine to do it, we, the analyzer, will have to come up with those like directions of getting data. The beauty of machine learning is in the ideal world where you can feed it every data point you can actually throw at it, it'll figure out where the pattern is and where the missing pieces are, where the opportunities are in that
situation. Would you say another benefit of that, because you were talking about it removing the human component of it, like the stuff that's in our heads, is another benefit of that is that it would do it consistently? Because I can imagine that as being a problem, you know, if you have three different sales guys that might interpret data differently, this would be a consistent source.
That's true too. We think a little bit like how learning pattern works as well. We learn that we should look at the West instead of just focusing on the East side of the theater market and whatnot, based on our past experience. But our past experience might be limited because we only have so much experience doing it that way. And Jay, you brought up a very good point. You could be limited because psychological state as well, or your preference as well. So using something like a machine learning model will be more objective about a situation and won't be too biased towards certain direction. And because of that nature, it will discover things that we usually miss or sometimes miss.
I've only been here for going on, 3 years now, but you've been here a bit longer. What was our first break into using machine learning?
At the time, I was very interested in this area, and one of our clients came to us with a problem of identifying handwriting and hoping to turn them into digitized format so we could like speed up the importing of those handwritten data. So that's my first crack at it. And it turns out that's one of the harder problems, if not the hardest problem to solve.
Yeah, because our handwriting's terrible.
Yes. yep. You could have very, like, Rob, your handwriting was perfect when we were using it.
Thank you very much.
Your handwriting to actually, like, test the system. But somebody else, like, at the time we have an intern that is actually, I intentionally told him to actually write it in a way that it's hard to tell the difference in.
I think that was Pierce.
Yeah.
Bless his heart.
He messed it up enough. But that particular project exposes, like, gave us a chance to actually apply my learning on the side into actual project and have to utilize two form of deep learning at the time using a combination of something called convolutional neural network, which handles image data, and something called...
Hold on, that sounds really convoluted.
Yes.
Convolutional neural network.
Neural network, yes.
Do we dare ask what that means?
Oh, gosh. It's going to be hard to explain it in very layman terms, but it's like applying filters on a piece of image. It's kind of like our eye when we look at a cat, right? We look for a pattern of like rounded shapes like an eyeball, and we look for a head-like shape for a cat's head, and some ear shape, half circle-ish kind of shape. And that sort of things is what the training will give the filter ability to actually look for in those images.
Handwriting recognition is fascinating. And like Apple just announced the other day, even more improvements to the iPad OS.
Yep.
So now you can, using your Apple Pencil, scribble handwritten notes into just normal system dialog boxes, and it'll recognize what you wrote and take action based on your input. So that seems to be like taking that example to an even greater extreme.
Absolutely. I was very excited and blown away by how far it has come since about 3 years ago.
Because like 3 years ago when you did this, Google's OCR wasn't even a thing.
We actually, when we were faced with this project, we tried it on Google's OCR, tried it on Microsoft Azure's OCR, tried it on everybody, and nobody solved it well.
Oh, wow.
It's interesting to see how that technology is finally starting to make a leap forward. I remember, so I was such a nerd as a kid. I saved up my money and bought in the mid-90s the old Apple Newton Message Pad, which was their first PDA, you know, decade before the release of the, or 15 years before the iPhone came out. And it its big main feature was handwriting recognition. And it sort of worked. If you wrote very neatly, if you went through its training, it had a training model that asked for input samples of your handwriting. And if you trained it very carefully and then wrote as neatly as you possibly could, it worked pretty well. But it was slow, and the device was big and heavy and clunky, and certainly wasn't as versatile as what we have today. But there's been attempts to do this kind of handwriting recognition at a high degree of accuracy for a long time. But it only seems like it's the last couple of years that people are taking another look at it.
Yep. Is that because of the data sets, like the inputs becoming just larger?
I can try to answer that a bit. It's a combination of two elements, I think. Jay, you nailed on a really good point. Somebody like Apple would have the capability of collecting a giant set of training data from any kind of annotators, anybody writing handwriting like examples. That's one area. And second area is the advancement of modern processor being able to run very deep neural networks through a small chip sitting in an iPad. Those two things in combination of the advancement of the latest and greatest neural network on encoding and understanding these texts advances all that into a few days ago is like Apple's product.
So that's definitely a differentiator for the Apple Silicon is that a lot of those more sophisticated machine learning operations are done in hardware, not in software.
It's usually a hybrid. Actually, a combination of both. It needs the algorithm advancement and also the machine getting cheaper and cheaper to produce and smaller to fit into an iPad. But I think the biggest differentiator, I think, is probably what Jay mentioned about the amount of data that we could collect. Imagine like them sending an Apple Pencil and a tablet to a giant training farm for people to actually collect handwriting text. You would have way more data than we had when we started working on that project. But that's a key component to today's like machine learning test or project in general.
So I have to ask Jerry.
Yes.
The machine learning model that you built for handwriting recognition, when all was said and done, did it work?
I remember vaguely about 85%.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yes, it's missing maybe a couple of character per line. You always can do better over time with machine learning training and data collection and everything. Like a lot of use cases, we have to stop because we have a delivery to meet. Right. And we have to trade off and stop at a certain threshold. For example, 70, 80%. Is that good enough for the particular product or project? It might be, depending on your use case.
It might be enough to at least get them started and then give them, you know, room to grow, room to improve.
Yes.
So how are we utilizing machine learning now? We started with this experiment around handwriting recognition, and now what are we doing with it?
There are a couple of models that we particularly built for recognizing or identifying certain image elements inside an image. And those particular one, that is just a binary of whether that object exists in the image, we can achieve 90%, 99% accuracy fairly quickly. In general, like when you have a small set of category, maybe like a binary category, whether it's a yes or no, you can achieve very good state-of-the-art success very quick, within hours.
Really?
Yes. This particular client and use case, we built the two model to identify pieces or components of a marketing material. And at the end, we're trying to combine those together to generate marketing material automatically by the machine. In order to do that, we have to be able to identify those elements out of the image that we're looking at, whether that exists in there, whether that's the particular image type that we're looking for. This is perfect for a machine learning project to be solving, because we can't handcraft a detector of object type. Let's say you can't hard code a cat detector with just algorithm alone.
Or take the example of a company logo on a website.
Yes.
If they name the logo logo.jpg, then fine. But that's not always the case.
Yes. That's not always the case. And that's why we can send it a bunch of images and detect that particular image being a logo, not a logo. And for that particular use case, it can achieve very good results. You just need to have a good amount of training data to feed into it.
So in order to train machine learning models, from what you're saying is we just need good input data, that what you're pretty much telling the machine, this equals this, and then it looks through enough of that data to learn it over time?
Yes, yes. When we were taught as a kid that looking at an apple versus an orange, you just need to see enough of apple and oranges to be able to tell the difference. I think that's how we learn as well. So in particular, in this kind of image detection type of task, you just need to collect enough of the apple example versus the orange example. And when I say enough, in today's day and age, you can probably get away with just 1,000 or a few thousand of those images. And then you can actually have a trained model that works fairly well on detecting images versus orange versus apple. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely. So what you're saying is that you feed it a set of data. So you say, here's all the images of an apple and here's all the images of an orange. If I'm correct, would be called annotations on for the image. And then the machine would take that, ingest it, and then build its own set of rules based on that data.
Correct. That's the point. I think machine learning just kind of built the rule through the training process in a form that the model can actually keep and retain. And those rules are set in a way that we can't really like pick out. But when you run another image or video through it, it just outputs orange and apple by the end of it.
That's awesome. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
That was a really good example, Jerry, just to break it down into a very just simple rote understanding of how machine learning can be a benefit, right?
Yeah.
And never mind just how it works.
Think about the alternative to that. And this is really what I think Jerry's getting at, that machine learning solves for, creating some sort of like rules-based system. So let's take a text model, for example. So say you feed a bunch of text, and we'll use the same example of this text is talking about an apple and this text is talking about an orange. And you could create a gazillion rules that learn to interpret that in manually, right? Like where it's placed in the sentence, is it a subject, is it the object? And then hope at the outcome that you still are understanding it correctly. Or you can just feed a bunch of data to it to say, this sentence talks about an apple, this one talks about an orange. And then the machine creates all of that logic for you without you having to actually think through it.
That's correct. It's the classic bottom-up approach. If we were to create the rules and try to see if the sentence talks about red, wrong, reflective surface or something like that to describe an apple, but that doesn't capture most of it. It could be some really arcane example of describing the apple.
Right. Yeah. Or it could be a green apple, and how do you solve for that variation?
Yeah. Yeah. And red and green is just two of those colors. You have a little yellow, you have a little bit, variations of different color.
If I am trying to explain to a customer who has expressed an interest in machine learning, where do they start? Where do I point them? We've highlighted some very like fundamental basic use cases, but trying to contextualize it a little bit for our clients, or anyone out there who has an interest, where do they begin?
That's a very good question, because it's very case by case. There are very obvious use cases for identifying image or vision or video type of use case.
Sure, right.
There are very specific use cases of classifying this blob of text as positive or negative. One of our client gave us a work on building sentiment analysis on social tracking, whether the client is being talked about negatively or positively. But yeah, those are a very cookie cutter kind of use case.
Right.
But you can have different use cases for different kind of business. For example, one of my friend actually came to me. He was working on a like online car sales kind of startup, and he was asking if we can actually pick out the primary image of the car that they get from the dealer. And that's a very easy problem to solve for. You just need to have somebody actually pick out the primary image, or if you already have a setup database with a primary car of a vehicle, then you can train the model to actually pick out the best image to show for on a hero or as a primary image fairly quickly.
So, but in that example, you're saying you're not just picking out the first image in a sequence. You're trying to make a qualitative assessment of the images themselves and select the best one.
Correct.
So you're truly adding like a learned human element to that automation.
Yes.
Would that be summarized as like a recommendation piece then, right? Like, so if a user, I'm thinking of like a new customer coming into DS and us trying to make the judgment call of like, should this be rules based or not? If someone hints towards recommendations, would we pretty quickly lean towards machine learning?
That keyword itself is probably a good hint, but it all depends on, I guess, the trade-off, right? Sometimes you use something because it's fast and cheap and it's working. Sometimes you use it because it's the only way to solve the problem. So for things that you know that you can't solve it by building rules, you probably can't solve it by building rules. So you look at whether we can collect enough of those training data and train a model for it.
So the indicator might less be the keyword, and it might be more like how complex would the rule-based system be to solve this?
Yes, and if it's even solvable by a rule-based system.
And just to clarify real quick, when you say a rules-based system, you're referring to just basically simplistic statements or configuration methods that say, if this, then that. If this, then that. If this, then that. Yes. So if I want to receive a notification, it's a yes or no. If I want my background to be a dark color, it's a yes or no. If I want my alarm to go off at 6:30 in the morning, there's no learning involved. It's just is whatever the selection is.
It's just a branching tree, if you think about it. It's a tree walking process.
Let's take the example of waking up in the morning. Okay. So a rules-based approach to that could be, well, Jay sets his alarm for 6 a.m. every morning. If he turns off his alarm three times, then we need to activate a second alarm to go off at 6:30 to make sure he's not late for work. A learning model would be, well, I've noticed that Jay's done that X number of times. Maybe I need to come up with some alternative method to wake Jay up, increase the volume of the alarm, or recommend some other response that isn't necessarily hard-coded.
Yes. Well, that's a very good example, right? It could be like increase the volume, increase the frequency, or change the tone, or use other connected device that you can actually make sound out of.
Man, that sounds like this is going to be a brutal morning for me. Jeez.
Yes. Yeah, turn the lights on in Jay's room.
I love this because, like, as you were describing that example, Rob, I was actually thinking of one of my first smartphones was like a Motorola Razr Max, and one of the distinct features back then was like there was very brand specific apps, if you remember, and there was this app that I think ended up rolling out to everyone else, but it was I forget the name of it, Smart Actions, I want to say, and it pretty much did the if then. You know, or if this, then that kind of situation. So I loved it because you could set all these triggers, just like you're describing. If I snooze my alarm, then do this. And you could set all the rules yourself. And I remember thinking it was such an amazing feature. And then within like a month, I didn't use it at all. And it seems like the progression of technology is saying, okay, we can't rely on users to create these automations themselves. Instead, we're going to look at their action, use that as training data, and then just recommend to them what they should do so that all they have to do is hit yes.
So I see that happening with my wife's Apple Watch. So she uses the Apple Watch to track all of her physical movement and activity and exercise and things like that. And it like really the only main configuration is this general level of activity. So it gives you three options. It's like low, medium, or high. And then from there, if she hasn't gotten a certain amount of physical activity in a certain day, it starts to remind her that. And over time, I guess maybe a month into her using the thing, it starts giving her reminders throughout the day. Hey, it looks like you're not exercising as much as you normally do. Hey, usually you walk a little bit more than you have so far today. Don't forget to get your steps. Hey, you've been sitting a lot today. You don't normally do that. Maybe you should stand up. And it's funny because in some ways it's like an antagonistic mother, but or I shouldn't say mother, an antagonistic parent. But at the same time, you can tell the types of notifications and reminders she's getting have evolved. They've changed over time and they've gotten smarter based on a broader view of her overall trend of activity.
That's what a lot of us notice. And that's basically the trend of a lot of a bigger size player that can have access to a lot of the data, and they can actually do a lot of good recommendations. We see that on the message we type. We see that on Gmail's recommendation to complete autocomplete your sentence. We see it on Amazon's product recommendation. We see it on the Apple Watch notification or reminder of your activity. Pretty much everywhere we turn with a gadget, and it does feels like a little intrusion of privacy a bit, but I guess the reward is we have better tooling at the end of the day, and that's a different conversation on the privacy issue, but the output is it's amazing.
Jerry, if I'm a developer and I've never done anything with machine learning before, how might I get started? How might I learn about it?
I'm the type of person that like learn by building. So you can actually learn the high level concepts everywhere. There are tons of videos and blog posts out there, but I would do my like get my hand dirty and build something like that to get a sense of it. And that would probably sit in your brain more so than you do if you go through a typical class. That's how I would see it. But to get really good at it, you do want to know the fundamental, the why, the inner working of the optimization technique, the math on calculus, the derivative, the how it actually does the training of back propagation, or learn from the mistake of adjusting those error rates. You would learn those later, but I think the best thing is actually have a rewarding hello world experience with machine learning, and that satisfaction is just reinforce your willingness or wanting.
So you hear that, kids? Pay attention in calculus class.
Yep, I didn't remember most of my calculus, but you just have to.
It's like riding a bike; you get right back on it. I'm sure.
Yeah.
When you have new clients coming in, what do you think some of the biggest challenges are for implementing machine learning into their architecture, I guess?
You spend most of your time figuring out how to get training data. In the handwriting one, I have to spend a lot of time generating synthesized handwritten text from handwritten fonts, from a lot of image technique to create like a fake image, like handwriting image. In the recent task on collecting like example to identify whether that's a logo or not, I spend most of my time finding really weird logo images, really weird non-logo images to train the model so it actually trim out those outliers. And that end up being the most daunting task. And recently I've been thinking about a buyer profile kind of model for one of our projects as well. And that requires collection of sales data of the past. And sometimes people don't keep them. People don't have a good CRM system. People don't have a good accounting system that glue all those together. And you end up spending the time collecting them or figuring out a way to streamline the collection of those data. And that turns out to be the bigger problem. The model side, it's going to be some work, but it's way less in terms of proportion of time spent on. So like if a client comes to us, we would look at the problem that they're trying to solve, whether there is data that is currently collected in their database system, that they collected on their analytics system, that they collected on their image or video archive system, and figuring out whether we can actually save the collection.
Like legally, that's what you're saying, is like, can they legally save
and store? Yeah, of course.
Wow, yeah.
Yes, that's another problem, right? Whether you can legally use those store data or image right. or video, that's another problem. But a lot of time is actually getting that bundle of like data, and if we can, how do we actually build that into their future user journey or product workflow?
So here's a question: how often have we encountered a challenge where someone is creating a model to analyze a certain set of data, and that the data that the model is actually performing analysis on, they're legally safe to process that data. The customer has the rights to that information. But the training data that's used to inform that model might be questionable in terms of legality. Is there an ethical dilemma there? Great, we used all this training data that we found on the internet that may or may not be proprietary, may or may not be copyrighted, may or may not be in the public domain. But we trained this model that can now go do something else that we know is legal. How do you draw that distinction? How do you navigate that?
I don't think anybody fully have the answer to that, since this area is so new in the eyes of the lawyers and the legal system. Obviously, if the data is completely captured by your privacy policy, and it's captured in the process of you using the application or your user using the application, then those data, you own them. You obviously have the legal right. And I'm not a lawyer, but the data that is sitting out in the public, that's not something that I can answer. However, if you come down to the model that actually captured the learning, those inferred rules and whatnot that they're sitting in the model, I don't think those would touch any copywriting, like legality issue itself. Those rules are inferred by the data itself. And I'm sure the legal system is catching
sure.
up in right. this particular world.
I've worked on a few projects that have used machine learning models with Jerry, and we have kind of hit on this legal issue before. And it's not an easy one to even kind of ethically and inside yourself understand, because I think the internet in general was kind of founded on kind of a concept of open source, right? But then when you start entering in using open source data for the training of for-profit businesses, that's where it becomes really complicated ethically.
Well, and then you get into this other ethical debate that just because information is in the public domain doesn't mean that it was intended to be there.
Exactly. Yeah. Or to be used for a specific purpose like that, you know.
That's right.
I think one of the big differentiators that I've seen in the argument is like, is this data potentially being used to harm someone? Maybe not physically, obviously, but like, take for instance, if your data is being used to help train a model that would then benefit your competitor, right? And your competitors utilizing it. I'd be pissed about that. And I think that's sure. rightfully so, you know?
Sure. Yep. That's fair. We'll be right back. all this is heading, Jerry?
Huh.
Is it going to lead to the destruction of the planet?
Or maybe Skynet?
Yeah. Is it going to become sentient and take over?
I think the real question is, has Jerry already built Skynet? And even this podcast is part of his training data.
That is a very good question. Please explain it, Jerry. Answer.
I don't know what to begin. I guess there will always be a fear of machine learning advances too far. There are already examples of it that, like, for example, deepfake of generating image yes. or videos of your president talking some random garbage that somebody scripted.
And I thought that was just the news.
You sorry. Can do that. You can generate fake article too. So those are obviously the negative of it. In any technological advancement in history, similar to the nuclear power, to electricity, to the advancement of chemical industry, there will always be good user and bad user of the tool. And it's really the person behind the tech that determines whether that could be destructive. My take is we are going to be faced with the advancement. The tool is going to be advancing. The tech is going to be advancing. You can avoid it, but you avoiding it doesn't change the world from using it and advancing it in so many ways. So embracing it, and it will always be a cat and mouse game in this process. You will always have bad user, and then you will also have good guys to come up with ways to counter the bad use cases. And that will continue on. And I don't think machine learning is anywhere close to being a general intelligence to figure out and think like human.
Sure.
But they are all weak specialists. They can be very good at certain areas, like even better than human, like the chess player, AlphaGo, the game player, like determining mm-hmm. whether that's a cancer scan or that sort of thing. They're going to do a better job than human, but those are very narrow area. It will never get the point of having desire or growth, but a bad player can actually bake some of those bad behavior into the model. And you're going to have to deal with that. I mean, we have to in the future. It's just a matter of a cat and mouse game at the end of the day. That's how I see it.
Thank you for listening to the Experience Lab from Digital Scientists. If you'd like our help getting started with machine learning, or to learn more about our great work building digital products, visit digitalscientists.com.